I know there's not many Sundays left till the summer holidays, but if we can try to complete our study in Hebrews chapter 11, we may not do that, but we're looking at these list of names in verse 32, and then in verses 33 to 38, some of the triumphs and the sufferings that is attributed to their faith. And then verses 39 and 40 are a bookend, just as verses 1 and 3 were. And in between those two bookends, you have these chapters, mini biographies of men and women of faith. And it's a surprising list in verse 32. Because of lack of space, no details are given for each hero. That's different to what has gone before. But there are some surprising names here. We can understand maybe Gideon and Barak being put down. But others, especially from the time of the judges, raises a few eyebrows. Jephthah, we looked at him last time. He seemed to have made a rash vow, and yet he is held up here as an example of faith. And the one that we're going to look at this morning, Samson, is even more of a strange choice, because if you read the accounts of Samson's life in Judges, we only read chapter 16, but from chapter 14 to chapter 16, we read of a man that had very great failings, especially in the area of sexual morality. And yet, he is being commended here as a man of faith. And that is what I'd like us to look at this morning. Samson, what can we learn from him in terms of a life of faith? Now, let's mention again that the Lord doesn't look at the outward appearance. He looks at the heart. And our tendency is to do the opposite. And as a result, we write people off. And we must be very careful, especially when it comes to those who have been guilty of spectacular failings. Think of King David committing both murder and adultery, and yet he is still the man after God's heart. Not that that justifies what he did. It was King Saul who was the unbeliever, and his sins were more sins of the heart than outward sins. It was only toward the end of his life that he committed witchcraft and suicide. But Samson here is held before us as an example. And some of the references in verse 33 are about him. Stopped the mouths of lions. Subdued kingdoms. Escaped the edge of the sword. Waxed valiant in fights. Turned to flight the armies of the aliens. And yet, in spite of those victories, it is tarred by his obvious failings. So we need to look at this man who is portrayed to us, warts and all, and I'm sure we are relieved that these men and women of faith are not perfect, that it is in the real world that God raises up a people for himself, and those people are still in the flesh, and sometimes, for our instruction, the Lord allows those of his people to fail spectacularly so that we can learn lessons from them. So I want us to take Samson this morning as a beacon. I know he's a man who's commended here for his faith, and I don't want to approach him in terms of writing him off. But I do want us to learn from his mistakes. And it's a positive thing then for us, even though we have to note some of the negative things in Samson's character and life. And let us look at his growth. You know that he had a promising beginning because his parents were consecrating him as a Nazarite to the Lord. So if you can keep one finger in Hebrews 11 and then turn to the relevant chapter in Judges, and we'll have a number of references then in Judges 14 to 16 as we look at the development of Samson as a person. It's not a hagiography that we have of him. That is hero worship. It's a real portrayal of the man of God. So in Judges 13, we have this. The angel of the Lord, verse 3, appeared to his parents and said to the woman, "Behold, now thou art barren." So Samson is going to be a miracle. "And bearest not, but thou shalt conceive and bear a son. Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine nor strong drink, and neither eat not any unclean thing, for lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." So this is God doing something in days of declension and discouragement. And just as God raised up judges on previous occasions, so he's raising up a Samson. But God doesn't do things in exactly the same way all the time. He isn't straitjacketed. He doesn't use clones. He uses real people. And even though Samson has his strengths, we'll see that there are certain flaws in his character which we need to learn from. So there is much promise here. He is going to be from the womb consecrated unto God. Now, I know as we're looking at Samson, there is going to be at times a hint, maybe more than a hint at sometimes, like the words of that prophecy of him being a type of Jesus Christ. But that's not what I'm interested in this morning. It's in terms of his example to us. So he has a promising start. He takes this Nazarite vow. And then I want us to start by looking at his youth. We do pray that our children will come to remember their Creator in the days of their youth. And much good can happen as a result of that. And that's what we see in Samson. Let's look at one example, which has already been mentioned, of what he did when he was a young man. And this was an act of faith. So in chapter 14, I know this chapter begins on a seemingly discouraging note because he goes down to Timnath to take a wife from the daughters of the Philistines. But we mustn't judge by outward appearance because God was going to use this to judge the enemy. That is mentioned. Verse 4, his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. This is going to be seen now throughout the life of Samson. God bringing good out of evil. But this is what I want us to take note of. As he was going there, he comes across a young lion. Verse 5 of chapter 14, a young lion roared against him. And note, it isn't in his own strength that Samson fights the lion. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent him as he would have rent a kid, and he had nothing in his hand. But he told not his father or his mother what he had done. There are some things that have to be kept secret when the Lord deals with us. When the Lord sometimes comes upon us and gives us a sense of his presence or an ability to do something, it's between us and the Lord. So we can see straight away that there's something special about this young man. And then when he is interested in this young lady, a daughter of the Philistines, there is a dowry, and it sounds like an impossible task. And yet, Samson again, he acts in faith, verse 19 of the same chapter, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and slew 30 men of them and took their spoil. And that's again an act of faith. Notice that there's a growth here in his faith. Stopping the mouth of a lion was quite something. To kill 30 men of the enemy is an even greater act of faith. And that's how the Lord deals with us. If we are given grace to do something for the Lord, he can trust us then with more power. And don't we know sometimes that's happening? So it looks promising here. And then there is another mention, chapter 15, of Samson doing something. By this time, the Philistines know about him, and they want to be rid of him. And we read in chapter 15 of Samson doing more feats of faith, verses 7 and 8. Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. It wasn't in his own strength, it was through the power of God. And then, this is shameful, we read of the Philistines going to the children of Israel and asking them, who has done this? They realize it's Samson, and he's taken captive. Imagine the people of God giving over a judge to the enemy. It's very foolish behavior on their part. They lacked the courage of Samson. But then what do we find? He's bound and handed over to the enemy. And then what do we find? Verse 14, when he came unto Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him. And here are the words again. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. And the cords that were upon his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire. And his bands loosed from off his hands. And he found a new jawbone of an ass and put forth his hand and took it and slew. How many this time? 30? No, 1,000 men therewith. He's increasing in his faith and in what he's able to do through it. With a jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with a jaw of an ass, have I slain 1,000 men. Very well then, Samson's youth has this record of these triumphs of faith, and there's an increase in them as he proceeds. But you know what I'm going to say now. In spite of those, there is a hint in his young age of this flaw in his character. Let me just mention those to you. Even though the Lord did bring good out of it, I do think Samson's to blame for choosing a daughter of the Philistines as a wife. He was going against the command of God there. Judges 14, verse 2. And then, verse 16 of the same chapter, Samson's wife wept before him and said, thou dost but hate me and lovest me not. Thou hast put forth a riddle unto the children of my people and hast not told it me. And he said unto her, behold, I have not told it my father nor my mother, and shall I tell it thee? He likes to play. And that's going to be the cause of his downfall later. I don't want to read too much into this, but is there not a hint here of pride on Samson's part? And the way he orders his parents in verse 2 of that chapter to go and get her for me to wife. We must be careful that we don't read too much into the text, but I did say these are hints. And then in chapter 16, it becomes even stronger. Verse 1, then went Samson to Gaza and saw there an harlot. This is after now he's had those victories over the Philistines. And went in unto her. Now that was obviously wrong. we can maybe say there's a grey area with him going to the Philistines for a wife, because God did sometimes allow certain things, and the period of the Judges was a very strange time, and God was going to bring good out of it. But when we read in chapter 16, verse 1, of Samson going to a harlot, even though he's a married man, then it becomes more obvious that there's an obvious failing here. And then, when we read of Delilah, that's even worse. So Samson's youth, there is much promise here. He is blessed of God, and he is anointed of the Spirit of God in terms of doing great things. But he has certain imperfections. There are weaknesses in his armor. And this gives place to the evil one then. It begins with him wanting a wife of the daughter of the Philistines. It grows into him then going later on to a harlot, and it reaches its full-blown consequence when he goes into Delilah. How can we learn from him here? Peter Lewis is very good here. Early privileges must not be taken for granted. The gifts and trust and opportunities must be safeguarded, not squandered. None of us are safe away from the side of God. The most long-standing Christian leader, Samson was one of those, a judge, the most knowledgeable theologian, the most talented and useful preacher or evangelist, even the most stable of God's servants can fall and fail and end their days in tears. What is our Achilles heel, I wonder? Samson's was in the area of self-control, the lack of it. That's how the devil was able to come in. Where is ours? We all have an Achilles heel. The Puritans used to talk of a besetting sin. There is a certain sin that we're always fighting with. It's going to be different for each one of us. It has to do with our temperament as well, I'm sure. You cannot separate soul from body. But what is it to us? We need to be on our guard against it. And it's sometimes our strength that's the source of our weakness. Let me read Romans chapter 13. Some very important words. These were the words that God used to convict Augustine of Hippo. He's very similar to Samson in many respects, because he struggled as a young man with this area of sexual immorality. Didn't he pray as a person before he was converted, "Lord, give me continence in this area, but not yet"? And God one day spoke to him. He was in a garden somewhere, and he was being convicted of his sin. And I don't know how it happened, but God spoke, and he heard the words "tolle lege" in Latin, meaning "take up and read." And there was a copy of the scriptures there, and he picked it up, and the page opened on Romans 13, verse 12, and he read these words: "The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ." That's the positive. What's the negative? "And make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof." There's a chink in the armor of many a young Christian because they allow the devil to get in. They will say that there's nothing wrong in what they're doing. And in a sense, I can understand that. But what they're doing in terms of their behavior is giving place to the devil, just as Samson was doing it in terms of his lack of self-control. Let us be careful. Let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. It might be a very small chink. Think of Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings and Helm's Deep, that fortress in the land of Rohan, which was supposed to be impregnable.
And yet, there was a little culvert, a little water course at the bottom of the wall. And that was the chink in the armour that the enemy used in order to bring down those walls. And it might be something as small as looking at the internet and YouTube and a few clicks taking you to sites you know you shouldn't be looking at. It might be something as small as wanting to be out with your friends and going with them to places where you're justifying your witnessing to them, but actually it's the devil having an opportunity. It might be something as small as not forgiving what somebody has said against you and beginning to harbour unkind thoughts about that person and that then growing as a cancer. And we could go on. So that's the first thing. And maybe when we're young, I don't know why I'm using we there, but when you're young, you need to be on special guard against those lusts of youth. Samson's youth, great promise and victories, but it was tarnished by these things. And I know of good Christian young people who are desiring to be witnesses to the Lord, but it's being spoilt because they're giving a place to temptation by not reining in certain areas. It's not legalism I'm thinking about now. It's being circumspect. Now, let's look at his middle age. This is when often the rot sets in spiritually. Delilah. You see, Delilah was the culmination of a lot of giving in to lust. I think Samson would have slept with a few harlots over the years. And then he crossed that line which was going to cause his downfall. You know, when somebody falls spectacularly in public, and it doesn't have to be in terms of sexual immorality, it can be in terms of money or anything else, it often doesn't happen suddenly. There has been something going on inside for a long time. There's been a lack of self-control in the heart, and that eventually leads to a spectacular fall. It can happen suddenly, but often it's because we've given ground for a long time that we don't realize when we cross that line, and then we're in for a fall. I hope you can see that the best antidote here is this fear of falling. If we think that we are standing, then I'm afraid we're already on unstable ground. So Samson goes into Delilah. And we don't have to go into details. We know the story. She is asked of the Philistines to find out the source of his strength. And he plays with her as he's done with other women before. And she pesters him day and night. Isn't there a picture here of the evil one tempting us, enticing us to sin, not letting us go? Verse 15, how canst thou say, I love thee? Oh, that's how the evil one often speaks. He transforms himself into an angel of light. When thine heart is not with me, thou hast mocked me these 3 times and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. It's only a little one, he says to us. You need to relax after working all day. There's nothing wrong with going online. You need companionship. There is nothing wrong with going out with your friends to certain places. You deserve to be treated in a certain way. There is nothing wrong with wanting revenge on those people. They only deserve it. That's how he treats us. And this nags at Samson day and night. And in the end, he yields. And he says that if somebody shaves him, then he will lose his strength. And that's what happens to him. Now, I just want us to concentrate on verse 20. Did you ever hear Brian Edwards preach on this verse? Was it here that he preached a very famous sermon on this verse in one of our revival conferences, or was it somewhere else? It was a very powerful word. Oh, how this is a picture of the church in our land today. And he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he did not realize that the Lord was departed from him. Oh, my friends, those words should strike us with fear. How it is possible for a person, a church, an organization to think that it is with them as it was in former times, and they try to do the same things as they did before, but there's something missing. There's no strength there, and they don't realize it. This is the lesson of Samson's middle period. You see, as Lloyd-Jones put it, the danger in middle age in the spiritual life is that we get into a rut. And one of the sure signs that we're in a rut is that we're going through the religious motions without realizing that we've lost the whole purpose of it all. The reason for gathering together isn't for the sake of gathering together. It's in order to meet with God. The reason for fellowshipping together is not friendship. It's in order to fellowship with our Savior. The reason to evangelize isn't just for outreach. It's in order that people might be saved. Let me read to you another example of this. New Testament, you know these words, Revelation 3. This is the equivalent of Samson in a church, the Laodicean church. Verse 16, because thou art lukewarm, neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Samson went out as at other times and hadn't realized that the Lord had departed from him. Was it Trench who said, when God blesses, the first generation is godly, the second is orthodox. It still has the shell, but there's no more kernel there. And the third then throws away the shell. It's worldly. Are we in danger of Laodiceanism, I wonder? Are we thinking that just because we are Heath Evangelical Church, just because we are, say, the Evangelical Movement of Wales, or we are another good organization or church or whatever, that means we must be all right? My friends, if that's our mindset, we have already become Laodicean. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. George Whitfield put it like this. This is what Avion Evans said. Study without prayer is atheism. Prayer without study is presumption. Self-reliance, complacent. Isn't that the tendency in Reformed Evangelicalism today? We even use the word blessing to describe every meeting sometimes. Have you noticed that? Now, that can't be the case, because even in the New Testament church, there were certain times when the Lord drew near, and other times it was harder. And you'll find the same in the history of the church. So you cannot say that every meeting is a great blessing. I know the Lord is with his people at all times. We must never deny that. Our standing is the same. But there are certain times when we know the Lord is speaking to us. And at other times, it's hard, is it not? And we find the same with our witnessing.
with our living, with our quiet times. Oh, often we have to struggle through, and there's nothing wrong in saying that it's hard. But there are times when he draws near. Let us not be complacent. Maureen read that poem about the ship trapped in the doldrums and about all things being suggested to get the ship out of the doldrums. Somebody said they needed to change the colour of the ship. It needed a new coat of paint. Somebody else suggested we need to move the chairs around. Somebody else suggested we need a new captain. Somebody else suggested we can pull the ship out of the doldrums ourselves. We'll get into the lifeboats and we'll put some ropes onto the ship and we'll try to do it. And all of those suggestions in and of themselves may have not been wrong. There's nothing wrong with painting or with changing the chairs or whatever. But the attitude was wrong because these people thought that this is going to take the ship forward. But what was needed was the wind. And that's what the church needs today. You see, we must know the mind of the spirits, even in terms of making little changes. I don't want to change anything unless we're led of the Lord. But we don't change things in order to take things forward. It's the breath of the Spirit that moves the church forward. Any change should be in terms of setting the sail of the ship so that when the Spirit comes, we are going on the top of the wave. Now, my friends, where are we when it comes to this? Are we like Samson in 1620? We think that we have the strength and the power of God with us as before, but we haven't realized that something's missing. The middle period. It's the complacency, I think, that stands out in the middle period. And that was behind Samson's lack of self-control. He thought he was in charge. It's pride, you know, that's behind every sin. Pride is the mother of all sins. Pride, unbelief. And then look at Samson's end. He's caught by the Philistines and he's taken, bound and blinded to Gaza. And they're going to have this sacrifice to their god, Dagon. And there are 3,000 Philistines, the lords and ladies of the Philistines here. They are standing on the roof of this house. Samson is below, tied to... He's not tied to the pillars. He's bound in fetters, but he asks the guard to untie him so that he can lean on the pillars. And what do we read? Verse 25, Judges 16. Call for Samson, that he may make us sport. Do you find that resonating? What happens when the church becomes complacent and continues in the way she's gone before? Activism can't keep us going. We run out of strength if we're doing it in our own power. If something's not of God, it will come to nothing. And eventually, the church, instead of just being orthodox, throws away the shell and it just becomes worldly. And what does the church become then? It becomes a plaything in the eyes of the world. And isn't that what we're seeing today in evangelicalism in Britain? If you don't believe me, look at the God channel. And I find it beggars belief that Christians are taken in by a lot of the stuff on that channel. Now, there is still some good stuff on it. I don't want to write it off. But the manipulation that goes on. And sometimes the word isn't even expounded aright. And this is the irony. The world sees right through it. But a lot of well-meaning believers are taken in with it. We're making ourselves look foolish in the eyes of the world. What did one of the psalmists say? Let not thy people turn again to folly. Because if we haven't got the Spirit of God with us, that's what we become. A sport. And actually, the world entertains much better than the church. If I want to go to a concert, I'd rather go to St. David's Hall than go to a church. And yet, this is the encouragement as I come to a conclusion. Samson, physically blinded in that house, is spiritually coming to his senses. Thank God that when the Lord brings us to dire straits, it's used for our spiritual good. And he realizes that he's been foolish, that he's been relying on his own strength, that he needs to repent. Isn't that what we need? McShane said, a holy minister is an awesome weapon in the hands of God. And the same could be said of Christians. It's not better methods that we need, but better men and women of God. That's what we need to do, my friends. We need to come to our spiritual senses. We need to repent. We need to humble ourselves. We need to clear the deck of things that are blocking our communion with God. That's the call that should be heard. Let me just give you a few examples and then we'll be done. Hosea is a lovely book in this regard because God is wooing his people. He's not a vindictive God. We see that with Samson. God is so long-suffering with his servants. We would have written Samson off, but God doesn't do that. I just want to read Hosea 7. This is a description that can be applied to Samson as well as to the church. I preached a while ago on verse 8 of that chapter. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned. He's not fully following the Lord. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he knoweth it not. Yea, grey hairs are here. I'm sorry, grey hairs are here and there upon him, yet he knoweth not. And the pride of Israel testifieth to his face, and they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this. Oh, hasn't the church in our land become weary? We sometimes show it, don't we, on our faces. I'm not saying that in criticism, but we are tired because we've been going on in our own strength. And we've had enough of one scheme after another. And in time, people can become disillusioned. And the one thing we're not doing is coming to our spiritual senses and saying we need God. It's not these things that we need. It is God. Oh, my friends, the Lord allows us to come to the end of ourselves so that we can begin with God. Oh, may that not be said of us. The days of visitation are come. The days of recompense are come. And then, how does Hosea end? It doesn't finish on that note. It ends with these words, O Israel, return unto the Lord thy God, for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. How do I do it, you ask? Take with you words, says the prophet, and turn to the Lord. Say unto him, take away all iniquity and receive us graciously. So we will render the calves of our lips. Asher shall not save us. We will not ride upon horses. Neither will we say any more to the work of our hands. Ye are our gods. And this is lovely. For in thee the fatherless findeth mercy. Oh, this is what the church in Wales needs to do. Come back to our Father. What could be simpler? And how does he deal with us? Not with vindictiveness. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely. Jesus Christ says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. Those knocks are the knocks of difficulties bringing us to the end of ourselves.
What are we going to do? If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and he with me. Maybe for some of God's servants, it will be their deaths that will be what the Lord will use to restore them. And Samson in his death slew more people than in his life. He prayed to the Lord, "Lord, vindicate me, not for my own sake, but for your sake, over these Philistines." And he brought that building tumbling down. And my friends, it's as we die in order to live spiritually that the Lord will empower us and use us. Well, may God give us grace from Samson as an example and as a beacon for his name's sake. Let us close.